The following program, The Inclusive Voice, is sponsored by Diversity MBA Media and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
Good morning. It's Pam McElvain. I am the host of The Inclusive Voice on this wonderful Saturday morning. Welcome back, all of you. So excited to have you tune in this morning. But before we get started, I just want to share with you a couple segments on our diversity news portion. And the one thing that's come up, particularly with this race that we see going on with Biden and Trump, Trump basically is now taking credit for the cruel abortion bans across the country. He's saying, I put it to the states. And of the 50 states that basically are now can decide what they want to do, half of them that are red are deciding to continue with the ban. So the impact of the Supreme Court ruling, and if you remember Roe versus Wade, was the legislation that back in 1973 allowed for women to have choice over their bodies, to be able to have a legalized abortion for various reasons, to have the more productive life. You really don't know when a woman decides this is necessary. So after 50 years, SCOTUS decides to no longer want to have this civil rights available for women. What happens to this? What is the impact on this for underrepresented populations, particularly women that cannot afford, or if they are abused in the situations where they no longer have their right to decide what is politically best for them? So Trump is now saying he's taking credit for the overturning. And, you know, that's amazing to me. Wall Street Journal reports an incredible article and story about, you know, where he catalogs all the things that he did to misogynistically beat down, demean women. So when you're thinking about civil rights and what's important to your life, to human equity, to human kindness, you know, remember that the Supreme Court took away 50 years of civil rights. And that's an impact of diversity and humankind across the nation. The other thing is that I wanted to share with you the impact on the economy, where inflation, the rise of 3.5% higher than expected inflation. When this squeezes the banks, the rates start to really tighten up. So it impacts directly the ability to lend. Actually, from the New York Times, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, and Wells Fargo said they are in a weaker position of income of lending for homes and for other things. What does that mean? Well, that means that for, again, your economically disadvantaged people that have low income or that are first-time buyers for homes, that are in neighborhoods and communities that normally don't get loan funding for neighborhood revitalization, will not be getting any, or it's going to go back to double the rates. Again, why is this a diversity issue? Because impacting that group of underrepresented populations that are not going to be in a place to be able to enjoy the American dream. So we have to stay on top of and pressure, you know, what do we need to do while the economy and the marketplace is changing to continue to have fair and holistic opportunities for everyone. So with that, that's the Inclusive Voice and Diversity News. We're going to go to commercial break and we'll be right back with you right after this.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important, and we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frater.com.
From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. But Diversity MBA's education push extends beyond the public realm and into the private sector. Thanks to DMBA, enterprises embarking on their DEI journey have access to training webinars, leadership indexes, and more, all of which can help educate and transform a workforce. Embrace DEI. Diversity MBA can help. Visit www.diversitymbamagazine.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is Pam McElvain, your host with the Inclusive Voice. And before we enter our guests, we have a caller from Dave. I'm from Sacramento. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Oh, not too darn bad. Good morning. And good morning to your guests. I was, the very idea of inclusion, you're familiar with the social contract, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, for listeners that aren't familiar with it, it's how America beat the king in 1776. The king pretended that he was put in charge. He pretended he was put in charge by God, but he didn't look out for every sparrow. He just hogged it and had a party with it. And so everybody knew that, this king business wasn't going to work. And they decided to break free, right? So right now, the idea that God put him in charge, well, now, if you get a fat cat businessman that doesn't believe in God, and he just believes that he is God, and he can just decide to do some strange project that can poison a whole section of the world, that's not very, it's not a society that we can deal with. So it's like the social contract is being ripped apart by the corporate boys who don't even believe that such a thing exists.
Yeah, very, very well stated opinion. I really appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. You know, what happened, in prehistoric times, right? And to see it manifest today is a scary thing. And so, my answer to that is your vote counts. Your vote really matters in terms of everything, right? In everything that
even
we do.
Even the local races.
Yeah,
the
even
local
the local races.
Races. Sure. Yeah, I mean, who's on your sewer board makes a difference. It's at the library boards. There are a lot of different boards and commissions that the taxpayers can have a lot more say in. And make sure there's honest people in there and they don't have any problems.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your comments around the local impact as well. So, okay. So thank you for your call in from Sacramento. California is my hometown. And I appreciate you being up. Yeah. Appreciate you. Or San Francisco. Appreciate you being up early and calling in. And thank you for those really meaningful remarks. So we're going to continue on this morning. Thank you. And introduce our guest. Today, our show, we bring on Dr. Mary Donahue, who's joining us to discuss her new book, Digital Edition. But before we get started, I just want to say good morning, Dr. Mary, and welcome to the Inclusive Voice.
Good morning, Pam. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you're always doing innovative work, so it's really, really good time to invite you when we can. So one of the things that I know you have your show, I'm glad to see you now as my colleague as a host on WCPT. But for folks that don't know you, and also, Mary, I'm just going to tell you, put yourself on mute when we're not talking so the paper clutter doesn't come through my ears. Okay, guys, you got a little bit of production. But Mary, I want to read a bit about your background before we get started, because it's so incredible, and I know you probably humbly don't share this, but I want people to know why it's so important, one, to have you today and talking about the magnificence of your work. So, audience, give me a couple minutes. You know I don't like doing bios typically, and I usually want to ask the guests to tell us about their journey. But I want to share with you really who this expert is. And you can clearly go on the website, but she'll give you more. Well, Mary Donahue, she's an acclaimed social scientist who focuses on digital psychology. Huge right there, right? And her name is actually Dr. Mary Donahue, but we'll call her Dr. Mary. She uses her research as well as coaching abilities to guide and benefit many, many Fortune 500, Fortune 50 companies, Fortune 10 companies like Microsoft, Walmart, American Airlines, and others. But as a survivor, this is what's critical, as a survivor of chronic leukemia, Dr. Mary understands what it means and empathizes, and has been inspired by her experience to do this work towards reducing stress. And she's been doing this over two decades. In particular, her work has been featured clearly in all the mainstream media, you know, Harvard Business Review, Huffington Post, Financial Times, and many other places. And she's highly recognized, but her most recent recognition, won by Queen Elizabeth, as well as the Prime Minister. And then she was named, 18 Outstanding Women in Tech and the top 100 most influential women in America. So I just wanted to share a little bit about that, about this expert that we're talking to this morning, because I would really want you to pay particular attention in the conversation we're having. So sorry about that, Mary, Dr. Mary, but I wanted people to know, because this topic and this new book, it's so crazy. So let me ask you, so what do you do, right now in these times to keep yourself, mentally well, although you look fabulous, but to keep yourself mentally well and physically healthy?
Well, first off, thank you very much for talking to my mother about that introduction. And she would have loved it. But I think one of the things is what we're doing right now, and what I hope to continue to do on our show, is be with positive people. A lot of people don't know this about you, but you are one of the best examples of positive survivorship that I have ever seen, especially as an entrepreneur, as a businesswoman, and as CEO and president of a global company. You don't talk about this enough, Pam. You don't talk about how you were the driving force behind diversity when everybody said, who cares? And I think this is something we have to, shine some light on. And when you and I talk, and we can get passionate about things, we can do everything, but we're incredibly positive. The first thing we do when we see each other is hug. We talk about life. We talk about our kids. We talk about our husbands. We talk about everything. And, and there are times when we have the opportunity to talk about our beliefs with each other in a positive way. And I think one of the things we have to start looking at doing, and I've really dedicated my businesses to, is changing the way our brains see what we're experiencing. I talk about it in Message Received, my book before this book, Pam, but 90% of what we're talking, what we see digitally, and just think about the news.
So Dr. Mary, I'm going to interrupt you before we get into the deep dive, because I want to hear you share with what you do to keep yourself physically and mentally well. You talked about one thing, and that is the positive messaging, but what do you do every day to keep yourself mentally strong and physically well?
I do a lot. I focus my well-being as a priority. And I think women need to say that. just say it out loud. My well-being is a priority.
Yeah, my well-being is a priority. And because of you, you know, I have done some really key things about focusing my well-being. That's why I want you to share yours.
I am dedicated to giving myself as often, like there are times obviously I can't do this, Pam, but I try and work out an hour and a half every day. And by working out, that means sitting quietly outside. I try and go outside for 10 minutes every day, even when it's like minus 1,000. I make sure that I used to run, but as you probably know, I can't run anymore because I hurt my knee in New York thinking I was 30 running. And I also do meditation. And of course, I use My Stride, you know, my little company. Yes. I'm just going to put that out there.
Absolutely.
With micro breaks.
I do too.
And I think micro breaks are the key to my success because they allow you to take that breath, to bring in moments of calm into stressful moments. And if you ask me what else I do, I really watch what I eat and I get a lot of sleep. And I've cut down dramatically on alcohol.
Okay, that's real, right?
Yep, I'm not kidding. Because you know me, I loved my glass of wine at night.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, that's great. So thank you for sharing. And the reason is, it was really important, as before we get into this incredible conversation, is because, Mary, you have made it. I mean, when you've talked about, I mean, an entire book, an entire strategy, entire, mm-hmm. you know, academic, scholastic, you know, writings yeah. on women and stress and what we need to do. And what you just described, I've actually really implemented all of these techniques. And we will definitely talk about how people can get access to My Stride. But just these little things. The one thing I haven't done is gone outside in 1,000 degrees for 10 minutes. I might try that one to wake me up. But I do the ice cube on my face for about 2.5 minutes to wake me up.
How do you find that?
It was refreshing. Oh, I love it. Oh, my goodness. My Gen Z niece told me about it. Incredible. Whoa. There's this little holder that you order from Amazon, and it's just, I do it for just 2.5 minutes on each side of my face. Plus, it's a facelift.
I'm all into that.
So, you know what? We're going to jump really quickly and take a commercial break. And then, okay. Mary, we're going to come back. And I really want to talk about, you know, this digital addiction. What has inspired you to lean into this? So stay with us. We're with the CEO of Digital Wellness as well as social scientist, Dr. Mary Donahue. And I will tell you, I promise you, she's going to give you some nuggets that will stay with you for a lifetime. We'll be right back after this commercial.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
The world is embracing a remote, globalized, and diverse workforce. Is your organization prepared when it comes to understanding all the nuances of diversity? Diversity MBA can help. From an industry-leading journal and web publication highlighting professionals and best practices, to boot camps and conferences featuring noted and accomplished speakers, Diversity MBA is a driving force in diversity, equity, and inclusion education. Check out DiversityMBAMagazine.com and take the first step towards transforming your organization.
Welcome back. I'm Pam McElvain, your host with The Inclusive Voice. Here with me, I have my guest, Dr. Mary Donahue, and we're going to be talking about some great things on how to manage stress and a little bit about the digital addiction, which is what I want to learn about. So, Mary, you have, let me see if I can count your books. So, I love Message Received. That was the one prior to this one. Yeah. And what are the other, do you have your list in front of you?
I don't, but I can remember. I have the digital, the Donahue Mentoring System, of which you were part of the inspiration.
Thank you for that credit. I didn't expect that.
You
that was major. Let me just tell you, the mentoring, that book, the handbook process of that, it will never, ever go away. It was life-changing, transformational for Walmart. I just want to put it out there. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, I think, and then that's kind of one of the things that I want to talk about, is because you were the first one when I graduated with my doctorate to support me in terms of publishing my work, because nobody believed the value to the mentor and the wellness value to the culture of the organization of mentoring. And I think we really connected over that, because you published a case study of mine, and I continue to encourage you to publish your own case studies, as you know, because you're doing some amazing work in this area and inspiring people.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I will try to do that. But you know what? I love it. You said the culture of mentoring. This is, you know, and you don't get enough credit for that. So we will talk about that.
Thank you.
Incredible. And then the next one?
The next one, it was with Jack Canfield.
Yes.
That was Soul of Success, and it was a wonderful chapter in his book, and I learned a lot from collaborating with him. And then prior to that, I honestly can't remember the title of the book, and it was 20 years ago. I know it's around here somewhere, and my daughter has a copy because she likes to pull out the picture of what I looked like 20 years ago. But so I guess it's been five. This book makes five now.
Yeah,
and I'm working on another book on generational digital stressors.
You know what? I think that third book, because the fourth one is Message Received, Mary.
Yeah.
I think that third book had something to do with generations.
It did. It did.
Because I have to pull it up too, because it had something. And so and the reason I asked you to kind of go down memory lane on your books, because your books literally are very interconnected in terms of, you know, your journey. But if someone were to sit down and read the collection of your work, they would really have a comprehensive understanding of some of the, I would say, the interworkings of transforming, you know, both organizational cultures, but also themselves in terms of everything from wellness to being able to survive within corporate America. So now here you are. I mean, let's just talk a little bit, if you don't mind, first about the Digital Wellness Center, another award-winning company that you've created. What inspired you to go into wellness at the level that you are engaged?
During COVID, no one was. Everyone was doing the superficial thing, Pam. Like, go out and garden, drink water, listen to stories on Calm, like, do meditation. And for people that are achievers, high performers, that just doesn't cut it. You know, we were pre-COVID at our highest levels, working at our highest levels, and that gave us great joy. And I think we need to acknowledge that. It's okay to do that. It's okay to get joy from your work. It's okay to throw yourself into a passion. And with COVID, all of that was killed. And with COVID, we were told that we weren't allowed to hug people, that we had to interact with people digitally. And personally,
yes,
I believe it did so much harm. But there was no solution for the loneliness and the grief that we all felt. And that's what I tried to do with the Digital Wellness Center. To solve this issue of our brains feeling the loneliness and articulating it in unwell activities, which is anger, which is anxiety, which is depression. And the thing about stress, Pam, that our audience probably doesn't know, is we create it all ourselves. It's not like when you hurt your knee and you say, oh, I fell, I hurt my knee. You can't pinpoint what caused your stress.
Yeah, and that's what's powerful, is that you actually have the ability to mitigate something that you're in control of. Mm-hmm. And I love the micro breaks. And now, as you know, Mary, everybody's, you know, coming out with them and doing them. So that's the good news, right?
Yes.
But the good thing about yours is being able to do this. And so thank you for having a very realistic solution. So let's get into, you know, your latest book today. I love your titles of your book, by the way. They're just so incredible. Kudos to you and your marketing
Thank
team.
You.
But what inspired you to write Digital Addiction? You know, what is it? And you talk about when sister and brother had dealt with it. Give us a little bit of background.
So this book is purely personal. It is not like message received, researched with 34,000 people. It is definitely researched. But it's the story of my brother and I and my clients who came to me and my friends that came to me and said, we're done. We're out. We can't cope anymore. Help me. Mm-hmm. And in my brother's case, over Thanksgiving, and I'm sure that you and your family do this too, my family and I like to bet. They're silly bets. They're fun bets. My mom is like a queen of fantasy football. My sister-in-laws are great at it. It's a game. We grew up with it. But it's never been an issue. But a few Thanksgivings ago, my brother ended up betting huge amounts of money on the kick of a football. Who was going to win? And his whole personality, Pam, changed. And It was startling. His physical body changed. His face changed. The way he treated my daughter, his niece, changed. His obsession with his phone changed. He wouldn't eat. He began pacing. He began watching all these things. And I watched this downward spiral of my brother, and I wondered what the heck was going on. And that's when I got an inkling that, hey, digital is affected by mood. And so I gave Tim some micro breaks, and that's how our journey started together. And as you know, our micro breaks are designed on positive psychology.
Yes, yes. And you know, I was told, I think Dr. Meichner Kirshner, he's a trauma surgeon, and talked about how positivity and, you know, ignites a part of your happiness in the brain, no matter how negative the person is. So if we could get Trump to think of some positive things, he would be a kinder, better person. Which is interesting. And you know, sorry, that was funny, I know. But you know, I love the fact that you decided to sit back and share, you know, a personal story of your experience, because you definitely have had an incredible journey, particularly, you know, with your own experiences, you know, of a chronic illness and being able to be a few to recover from that. So in terms of, what are some of the similarities in, you talk a bit about the digital behaviors and some of the habits and different kinds of impacts that, you know, being constant on something. I don't want to use the word addictive too much, but, you know, but being, having the inability to step away. You know, what are some of the things that your book is helping people to understand when they're not just, you know, it's digital technology that you're talking about, but I'm sure some of those behaviors transfer to other things.
Absolutely. And I think in terms of just this conversation, to simplify, because I can get way too long winded on
this. Yeah. Let's say, yeah. You know, 3,000 feet.
Right. I think that one of the things that we have to look at is what caused, you know, as a scientist, you say, wait a minute, this is bad behavior. What caused this? And one of my professors once said, Pam, you know, great scientists don't go eureka. They say, huh, this is interesting. And to me, this was interesting was Tim making a bet and having this effect on him. So I stepped back and started to look at what were the external factors. Well, my father had died. Our brother had moved to Singapore. It wasn't the same type of Thanksgiving. It wasn't a party. It wasn't any of these things. So once you start looking at the external factors, and then you look at what he did. He was sad. He was depressed. He had been on his phone a ton. He'd been watching television a ton to watch the games. It caused him to make a series of bad decisions. And that's what happens when your dopamine is too high. And when your dopamine is too low, you don't make any decisions. And so my job with the Digital Wellness Center and our products is to put serotonin in the brain to calm it, to bring the dopamine back to a level where you can make a good decision.
Ah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what the trauma surgeon was telling me.
That's right.
So when you talk about, so what are some of the common signs of digital addiction that people might overlook in their everyday lives?
Well, they will overlook it in their everyday lives. And that's why I wrote the book, because I want you to look at the people in the book. The first is my brother,
okay.
Of course.
Okay.
The second is a business person.
Okay.
A business person who was looking at what I was suggesting and say there's no economic value in this. That was his opinion. And so once you have an opinion, and you can see this in politics, you can see it in fitness, you can see it in diet, you become obsessive. You get, and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, they all feed that obsession of yours. So you believe everybody is believing the same thing, and that's negative. And so what you have to do is you literally find yourself, when you're talking to someone about it and they disagree, you run to the internet to prove them wrong. And then you feel better. You're satiated. But that's negative reinforcement. There's no positive deviance from this. And this is what we begin to suggest. Some of the physical signs you'll notice is you're angry more. You'll feel a tightness in your shoulders, a tightness in your stress. We see this when people are addicted to their email, when they feel that they might be losing their job or that their boss hates them or any of, they become addicted to their email. They become addicted to meetings, and you can literally see their body physically feeling tight, Pam. And I'm pushing myself to show you, but I just realized we weren't on video. And so like, that's the first sign. And then when you cause people to go off, there's this need to go back on. I remember a case here in Toronto where someone got so involved in negative media feeds that they became a terrorist.
Wow.
And that was what that addiction did. And the person was very young. When the person started, it was 16, 17. And, you know, rarely do I agree with Florida, but I must say I do agree with them saying that children shouldn't be on social media at 16.
I agree. I'm with you. It does need to be managed.
Yes, it does.
It does. Well, you know, thank you so much for answering that. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with you more with Dr. Mary to really kind of find out, you know, you talk about the good, bad, and ugly. Well, she can explain to us, you know, what is the good, bad, and ugly when it comes to digital addiction. We'll be right back with you right after this commercial break.
Breakthroughs aren't just for medical journals. They're to help people hold their grandbabies for the first time. Expertise isn't just for awards or recognition. It can be what gives people the best chance to walk again. At the Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network, people are the driving force behind everything we do. So we never lose sight of what's important. And we never forget who it's for. Because in the end, we're people helping people. That means every breakthrough, every clinical study, every interaction is to help people like you, your family, and your neighbors be the best they can be. We do everything possible because we see everything possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frederick.com.
From emails that get no response to improper billing and shipping, to inventory mistakes, waste can be an expansive, encompassing problem. With a track record of success that includes over $7 billion in successful projects, Bold Business has been helping clients over two decades. Whether you seek to enhance the performance of current anti-waste and waste initiatives, reduce reputational damage in the face of heightened public scrutiny, or simply safeguard cost efficiency, Bold Business has the answers. Check out boldbusiness.com for more information.
Welcome back to this great Chicago land. Thank you, Devin, for turning up the sunshine for us. I'm here with Dr. Mary Donahue, CEO and president and founder of Digital Wellness Center. And before I forget, too, and we go into more details about the new book on digital addiction, Mary, where two things I want to ask you. One, where can people go to get the book Digital Addiction? And then second, where can people go to learn about My Stride, the digital wellness nuggets?
Thank you for asking, Pam. My book is at Amazon currently, and it's Digital Addiction, What Is It, and How One Brother and Sister Dealt With It. And remember, my last name has two O's, Don O'Hue. And My Stride, try it out for free. You get it for 30 days for free. It's mystride.co. As in company, but just co, C-O, so mystride.co. And I'm encouraging everyone to just go to Amazon. It's not, won't be in bookstores until probably June. You know how all of that goes, just trying to get things into a bookstore. But I'm very excited for you to have offered me this opportunity to talk about it. I'm very excited about this book because it's such a personal journey.
It is, and it's a great, great title. And it resonates with everybody. I love it. Breaking Addiction. So you talk a little bit about the good and the bad. You know, people think they know what that is. They think they know what's good for you, what isn't. But the experience, particularly in the context of the behavior that your personal journey, what are some of the things that resonated with you that you could share?
I think the biggest is awareness. Not many of us realize how much time we're spending on our devices. I didn't. I mean, at the top of the show, we talked about what I do. I actually get outside without a device. And it's really good for your soul. I can't tell you how much your brain appreciates that. Yes. And in psychology, it's called transient hyperfrontality. It's what we try and build into all our micro breaks. What that means is a clearing of the prefrontal cortex. Your brain naturally sees things negatively. It's how it's unfortunately and unfortunate since the advent of the smartphone, that's increased to 90%. And so we have a negativity bias. And you know what? 100,000, like years and years and years, thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, that negativity bias protected us and took us into fight or flight, I beg your pardon.
Right.
And but now what's happening is social media has learned to use it to get us to stay on them longer so that they can make more money. And now this isn't the first time this has happened. This has been happening since, the pre-Civil War. One of the greatest presidents of all time, Abraham Lincoln, got caught up in all this. And he almost lost his life because of it. There were thousands and thousands of newspapers in the same way that there were thousands and thousands of social media sites that can suck us in. And in his case, he wrote an op-ed that made fun of a blowhard, a politician who's a blowhard. And this politician lost his mind and found out who Abraham Lincoln was. This is before he was just like a practicing lawyer, and challenged him to a duel to the death. And Abraham Lincoln had to maintain face. And so he almost lost his life because he got sucked into all of this negativity. And he wrote negative things. And you know what he did? Because he was such a strong man, he said, I will never do that again. And if you notice in his writings, he never wrote a negative thing or said a negative word about anyone.
Wow. So, you know, it's interesting, Mary. I want to get some of that research on the 90% of negativity piece, because I have to use that. So please share with me. So so that's incredible. I didn't realize that level of impact. It'll explain a lot, unfortunately. But yeah. And so in terms of, you know, what people can do, I mean, you talked about some of the little things, you know, definitely going outside. But how do you, you know, being aware of this, you know, when you guys thinking about you and your brother, you know, when you're aware, you were aware of the issues and, you know, that were before you. What did you do? What was intentional for you to try to overcome some of what you were feeling? And how difficult
I love that word, Pam, intentional. And by the way, I learned all about this negativeness from a book called The Man Who Lost His Laptop. I talk about it in Message Received. I talk about it in this book. I'm happy to send you everything. But when we talk about intentionality, first of all, you have to look at what you're doing. In my brother's case, he had to admit that was a really bad decision. And then we walked it back. We micromanage it. How did you make this decision? What were the influences on this decision? Now, not a lot of people have a me sitting beside them, so they can't do this. So what I suggest is the first thing is identify if you have a problem. Time yourself. Are you betting for too long? Are you gaming on an Xbox for too long or a Switch for too long? What is the length of time that you are drinking at night? What is the length of time? Like, you have to identify, how many beers did I have? How many beers do I have a week? And then start to set some goals. In my brother's case, it was, hey, let's set a budget because, you know, you don't want to give up gambling. It's your entertainment and it's legal. So let's figure it out because, you know, you made one bad decision. Let's make sure you don't make more. And that's giving yourself some grace, Pam. So you've created an acknowledgement loop, you've created goals, and you've given yourself some grace, saying, okay, I might have an issue. Now I have some data to prove I have an issue. Here are my goals. And my brother started with an app called FanDuel, which allows him to set how much money he wants to spend, I guess, a day, a month, a year on gambling. And it keeps it to him. And then he got an accountability partner, which is his partner, his Erin. And she is fully familiar with what he does and how he does it. Tim's been gambling since he was 18, and they've been together forever. So, of course, she knows what he's doing. So now, if you look at what you're doing, it's very much like a journey in a car. The first thing is, you know, you need some care. So you put a seatbelt on. That seatbelt is those guardrails. So Tim's guardrails were understanding his addiction. Okay, I could spend too much money when I'm in a bad mood. Let me change my mood. So he uses micro breaks before he starts gambling. And we help him measure his mood. The next thing is those micro breaks provide a seatbelt for him to manage his mood. He also manages his money by using the app. And the outcome is he has accountability conversations with himself, or he has accountability conversations when he looks at the data, which the data shows, here's my mood for a week, here's my mood for a month, here's my mood compared to other people, and here's how much money I've spent, and here's how I've set to my budget. Now you're getting out of this realm of opinion and beliefs and self-flagellation. And the exact same thing happened to the families in the book, to the students in the book. It's the same cycle of, as you talk about, intentionality. Does that help?
Yeah, yeah. That's good. And so the also thing, you know, you talk about the environmental piece. So when you are in the same environment, and if you're not practicing, if you will, right, some of the things that you talked about, and, I mean, that's energy that you can't, you know, and I'm not an expert here, but I have seen where energy in the room can take over your intention if you don't have someone, you know, being able to foster it and direct it the way that you guys did. So,
it's funny, Pam, if I may interrupt, you started the show with politics, and Bill Clinton was the key. Like, I've never seen anyone change a room like Bill Clinton could with the energy. And so if you look at that, and then you look at some of the politicians we have now that have no energy, and they're having a hard time getting sticky. So the question is, how do you create energy? What do you do to get people to change? And my solution is always positivity, because we have so little of it.
I agree. I think I agree with that wholeheartedly. Particularly, it's so combative. But people in reality are in these situations. So one of the things when you think about, you know, with children, you talk about, you know, how parents can use the insights from your book to even help children, you know, manage their screen time and digital engagement. I remember with my kids are now in their 20s, but as yours are, as your daughter is, I remember trying to manage, just because I could see the fear, right? I could see the triple amount of time that my children are at school. They had laptops that they, you know, Chromebooks that they were now doing everything on. So they were on it at school. And then, of course, they come home and they want to shift and do something different. So I had my own fears at that time without instruction or direction to say, okay, this is how much, you know, you got to do your homework, and then the rest of it, you're going outside, and then we're, you know, so on and so forth. But I had to be real intentional in structuring the time, because I could just innately tell the negative impact on that. So what are some, you know, maybe two or three, you know, tips that you could give that parents can do and see immediate impact?
The first is what you just talked about. Be present. In my book, I talk about the Johnson family. Of course, that's not their name, but they're both physicians. And they came to me with the problem of their 13-year-old. And their 13-year-old was spiraling down into the social media. And they didn't really think it was a problem, but they thought it would be something to be aware of. Okay. And again, we said, you know, you have to be a little more intentional about this. How often is she on her phone? What's happening? How is it happening? And once they started to gather data as a parent, well, is she on her phone? Is she on her phone? They realized that she was on her phone from the time school ended till the time she went to bed. So, of course, she's going to be affected. Then they needed to, in this case, the addiction had really gotten away from, to, like, from them. And they're physicians, they're trained physicians, and they just weren't aware of the issue. Because it's never been an issue, it's only been a problem since 2007. None of us as parents are trained in looking for this. And so what they had to do is eventually go to a therapist. There's therapists now that are dealing in digital addiction. Mark Howerton is a great one. And then they had to, as a family, create a no-phone plan. And keep your phones downstairs. Do not let your children on their phones at night. Do not. There's no reason for it. I understand school. I understand study. But you are the parent, and you need to provide the guardrails. So, intentionality, data, guardrails, and if necessary, don't be afraid of therapy. It helps you figure things out.
Now, that's good. The therapy one, because there's some, now let's just be real. I'm just going to go here, okay? So, Hispanic and African American and some Asian cultures just aren't as, you know, keen on therapy for their children as, you know, as white Americans are. And I wish we would be, because therapy is, I think, a practical solution to helping children. Luckily for me, we were able, you know, I was able, smart enough in college to go to therapy and take my little brother because of the trauma we had with the loss of my mother. But, and I was an adult, you know, 20 years old, so I was old enough to take him with me. So how do you, you know, help those ethnicities you know, be comfortable with therapy. Just want to throw that out there right now, because that's a real thing, particularly around children. What would you say?
It's a competitive edge, Pam. If we go back to what I was talking about, when your brain is full of negative thoughts, you're a loser. Mm-hmm. You're not making good decisions. You're going to get into trouble. That's science. There's no changing science. You can't say, oh, he can cope or she can cope. No, no, they won't. They're making bad decisions. You're not giving them the best you can give them. And I typically don't go to this with parents, but I think in this case, I need you to just shake, give your head a shake. It's a not shame on you that they need to go to therapy. It's a compliment to you that you are able to provide this for your children and get it for them for free. Because the things that children are forced to deal with right now are horrific. Imagine even something as ridiculous as trying to understand the Prince Andrew case. Do you know how often that was on the news? And then trying to explain to children, if they were at all paying attention, what did Prince Andrew do that was so bad? Why did his mother get so mad at him? And then having to explain it to them? That's just a very small micro. But now let's take it to macro. Let's look at the wars. Let's look at the self-flagellation that people are talking about on TikTok to get thin bodies or to make your skin lighter. Like things that children are told, and you have to be able to manage that. And most of us, I mean, I have DR in front of my name, and I couldn't manage it for my own daughter. There's no way I could do a good job for that. Of course I put her into therapy, particularly after the trauma that she suffered. And you and I talked about that, and that's fairly personal, and that's for her to talk about.
Absolutely.
But you know, please don't think it's a shame on you that your children need therapy. And if you can't afford therapy, go to counseling. There's a lot of different avenues that we can do that don't cost money. And together, you and I can create a list if we have to.
But yeah, I love that.
My belief is that children today have such they have lost their competitive edge compared to other countries where social media and the use of phones is far more structured and overseen.
So thank you so much for those practical advice and real solutions. You're right. Don't take it personally. Getting people to not take it personally. So we're going to do a quick 30-second commercial break, and then come back from one last question, Mary.
Sure.
I want you to help us know what we need to look forward towards the future before we wrap up the show. This has been a great conversation. Devin, hit it with that last-minute break for folks to grab their coffee and come back and listen to the rest of the show.
At UPMC, we believe care goes beyond our walls and into our communities. That's why we support organizations and individuals who help people prosper by giving them skills and training for employment, including right here at UPMC. Because life-changing is providing people a chance to grow. Learn more at upmc.com/community impact. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
Okay, thank you everyone for staying with us to the close of the show. It's been a great conversation. And so, Mary, I need you to briefly share with us, give me a quick, 90-second futuristic, what we can look for, the evolution of digital habits, and hopefully our bodies can become a healthier temple with it.
First of all, I start to see a world where we have more guardrails. We know who's using what when. But also I see a world, and I know I'm working on it, neuroscientists are working on it, physicians are working on it, where we can have the right intervention at the right time for the right problem suffered by the right person. And so what that means is using artificial intelligence to help you not become addicted, to help you not go down that hole, to help you not constantly see negativity 90% of the time.
You know, thank you so much for that. And I will say for everyone, if you want more information on this great personal journey that you can align your own experiences to, go to Amazon for Digital Addiction by Dr. Mary Donahue, and also My Stride. I really, really, you know, you can just go Google the Digital Wellness Center. I guarantee you the 30 days free trial. And I'll tell you, even after the free, it's so inexpensive that you continue doing it. So, Mary, thank you again this morning for coming and being here in our show. Oh, my goodness. It's always a breadth of information and a joy to have you. So we appreciate you calling in from Canada as well, our sister country.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All of you, we'll see you next week on The Inclusive Voice. I'm your host, Pam McElvain. And we have launched for you the Inclusive Voice podcast, so you'll be able to see what we look like as well. All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you. Thank you. Stay tuned for our 8 o'clock show.
Bye.
It is a wrap.